Right. I see that there are a lot of hands up, so let's go straight cut to the chase. And Conchita, please. Please give a microphone to Conchita so that we can hear a question. I hope you can hear me, Dame Judy Bench. Yes, good, lovely. Lovely, thank you. Well, good morning. Over there on your left, congratulations for the Donostia Award. I'm not too sure, over there, I'm not too sure whether you'll have enough room at home to keep it. I would like to ask Judy Dench, how did film revolutionize your life when you entered into films in your life, and whether it's the love that you feel for film, is the love that you feel for film the same or more than you feel for theatre?
Ever wanted to be in the theatre, only ever wanted to be that, and I only ever wanted to do Shakespeare. Unfortunately, I went to the OVIC in 1957, and so I was at the Vic from 57 to 61, and then I was at the Royal Shakespeare Company with Trevor, who you'll talk to in a minute. And so I fulfilled that great dream, and then one day I was asked to go and see somebody about a film. I've never divulged who this person is, and I'm never going to do it. He's not alive anymore, actually, now, but I'm still not going to. And he interviewed me for this film, and then he said to me, thank you very much for coming. He said, you will never make a film, as you have every single thing wrong with your face. And so I put my chair back against the wall, and I walked out, and I thought, well, that's just as well, as I don't want to do any films anyway. So I went back to the theatre. But then it was later that that I started then to film, and subsequently became very, very fond of it, and only really learnt about it from watching my peers.
Vamos con.
Hi, good morning. Congratulations for the award. For the deserved award that you're going to receive this afternoon. You, a few years back, you did a magnificent job, as is usual in your case, by the way, in the film Philomena. Philomena showed a woman who was looking for her missing son many years back. And this is, it's a situation that has happened in many countries that have a Catholic influence, UK, Ireland, and Spain, that religious orders defending a certain morale do immoral things and unhuman things. Your character was trying to find that missing son who she'd lost many years back. I would like to know, how did you confront that role? Because it's a dramatic, which has, it's also a bit of humor in the character. And what's your personal opinion vis-a-vis the missing and the stealing of babies? Thank you very much.
I was very lucky in that the person I was portraying, I met just before we started filming. And having read that tragic story about her and looking for her son for so many years, I'd actually expected a very different person. When I met her, she had a great, great sense of humor and was amazingly resilient and forward-looking and upward-looking. I mean, she was full of life and you would never have imagined that that had actually happened to her, and that story was completely tragic. And, of course, we, as you say, we have now found that there are many, many cases of people who have lost their the babies were taken and sold, and in actual fact, the nuns, she told me, knew actually where he was, the person she was looking for, Anthony, knew he was buried there in the grounds of the nunnery. And she had gone on searching for him, and for years later, and the pain that could have been, you know, her pain could have been alleviated a great deal sooner. And like you, I'm very, very shocked about the fact that there are still cases going on like that, and still things to be found out about it.
Okay, hello Judith. First of all, congratulations for the awards.
Thank you.
You have worked with so many great directors in so many great films, and you are always fantastic. I would like to know if you remember any of these characters with a special love, and why.
I could be here for about 3 hours now answering this question. Well, the theatre is a bit different because in the theatre you are part of a company and the company is very much a unit. And in films, I remember once going to a film that I was in, and in the foyer, I was at the premiere, and in the foyer I turned and saw a friend of mine. I said, "Hello, what are you doing here?" He said, "I'm in the film," he said. You know, and that in a way is quite rare, that you form like a theatre relationship on a set, unless it's a very unique thing and not many so many people, and you're all working together all the time. So I remember, I remember so many films for so many reasons. I mean, I remember very, very well saying to Barbara Broccoli and Michael Wilson, after doing, I did 8 Bond films, and after about 4 or 5, I said, "How is it that I never get to go anywhere? I'm always in a kind of hut at the back, you know, and nobody ever sees." And so the very next time we filmed was in a public school in Britain, and they put me in a trailer, which on the side it said Innsbruck, and they said to me afterwards, "You can never complain again." So I remember that because of that, and I remember. Just after my husband died, and I was in a very bad way indeed, I went to Nova Scotia to do the shipping news with Kevin Spacey, and Kevin was an inestimable comfort and never mentioned the fact that he knew I was in a bad way, but I cheered me up and kept me going. And, you know, there are so many people that that for so many reasons that I owe my career to, actually. That's just 2 things.
Egunon, sorionak por el premio que vas a recibir. Aquí, Judith.
Congratulations, Judith, for the award that you're going to receive. Over there on the right. There he is. Okay. I'd like to know, after your life you've dedicated all to cinema, after many reflections, what do you think cinema has most contributed to you, and what it's taken away from your personal life? What is the most that it's taken away from your personal life, and what it's most contributed to you? Cinema, films.
It's because I was not interested in filming, I really knew nothing about it. And I learnt about it from watching. I remember when I was at the Vic and a young actress in 57, 58, I never remember going to my dressing room. I only ever remember standing at the side of the stage and watching actors all the time working. So I used to note things that happened differently every night, and just observing is learning. And when it came to making films, I had to learn from other people. And I learned from a lot of other people about, they do say that thing in films, and it is true, I think, that less is more, that as long as you have the idea, everybody says this who works in films, but as long as you have all the proper thoughts in your head, then very much the camera will pick that up, because the camera, being so sensitive, will actually pick up what is in your eyes. And so I've learned a huge amount about that, and I don't live in London anymore, so my journey into the theatre now, although I did 2 years ago, I was in Ken Branagh's company at the Garrick in London in the theatre, but that was wonderful. It was 4 performances a week, so that was glorious, because I could go backwards and forwards and backwards, but it took up most of the day, really, going in, doing the performance and going out again. And So that was wonderful. And if that was probably offered to me again, that it was on that kind of time sequence, I might well do that again. But at the moment, my time is taken up with filming. Thank goodness. I can't bear to say no to anything. I get very, very flattered to be asked, and then I can't say no. And then I don't have any time.
Hi, good morning. Over here, on your left, over there. There you go. She's going to stand up. She's not standing up now, but there she is. Okay, congratulations for your career and for the award. You've named Kevin Spacey. I would like to know what opinion the situation that he's going through at the present moment, Kevin Spacey. And then in the film that we've just seen, Red Joan, the young protagonist says that she's an invisible and powerful woman. You are now a visible and powerful woman. Do you consider yourself powerful in the world of cinema? How do you administer that power? Wow.
Of powerful at all. I have no power at all. I just have to wait for somebody to ask me to do a job and I'll do it. But I have no power to instigate that job or instigate a film to be made. I've called myself and always have called myself a jobbing actor. And I still think 61 years after beginning, I still am a jobbing actor. And it's what I was saying earlier, I can't bear to turn a part down because I think I may not be asked again, you know. what did you ask about Kevin?
The situation he's going through at the present moment, what's your opinion?
I don't know, I just imagine. I can't approve in any way of the fact, whatever he has done, that you then start to cut him out of films. Are we to do that as happened? I can't remember the film that he was replaced in by Christopher Plummer. Mm. Well, are we to do that throughout history? Are we to go back throughout history now and anyone who has misbehaved in any way or has broken the law or has committed some kind of offence, are they always going to be cut out? Are we going to exclude them from our history? I don't know. I don't know about any of the conditions of it, but nevertheless, I think he is and was a most wonderful actor. I can't imagine what he's doing now. And a good friend.
Hola.
Hi. Congratulations for the award. And it's an honor to have you here, by the way. I would like to know whether you could tell us what drew you to say, I want to be an actress. And once you started to perform, whether you fantasied with the fact that you were going to be so well recognized worldwide and so many awards and even winning an Oscar that I imagine is the summit of what an actor can achieve, if you catch what I'm saying.
I had two brothers. My father was a doctor. My eldest brother only wanted to be a doctor. My second brother, both of them older than me, only ever wanted to be an actor. And I only ever wanted to be a theatre designer, which is what I was in the middle of training to be. Sometimes I think I'd quite like to do that now, it was too late. But I suddenly, in the 50s, I was taken to Stratford and I saw a production of King Lear with Michael Redgrave, and the set was an enormous, huge, all I can think of is it's like a poppadom. It was, you know, like a huge biscuit, uneven biscuit. And in the middle was a rock, which one way was a cave and one way was a throne, but just turned round like that. And I had no concept of designing in a way that you didn't have to design Act One, and the curtain came in, and the curtain went up, and it had changed, and you did Act Two, or you know, and then Act Three, and I had no concept of this extraordinary vision of being able to do a set which was everything, with the minimal amount of change, and I think it was overnight, and I can remember saying to my parents, "I can never be that kind of designer. I don't have that imagination." And then because Jeff had only ever wanted to be an actor and went to drama school, I think I just thought, that's for me. Certainly not being a doctor was for me. But so I think I followed him and went to the Central School and went straight to the Old Vic. And as I said before, Shakespeare was my passion, so I was very, very, very lucky.
Okay, si os parece,
okay. I want to invite the director, Trevor Nunn, for the director of Red Zone. If you've got questions for Trevor, obviously, we will accept questions and he will take questions.
Shall I move?
No sé si tu
I'm not too sure whether your question was for Judy or for Trevor, but go ahead.
What challenge do you still have to conquer in the industry, in your career?
¿Cómo? ¿Puedes decirla en castellano?
¿Qué retos aún?
What challenges have you still got to conquer in your career in the film industry? Have you still got challenges ahead of you? That was for you, Judy, yes.
I don't know. All I worry about is I've got work ahead of me. I don't worry about... I'll worry about the challenge when it comes. But, you know, I'm always... in fact, I think it was Trevor who said to me originally on the first night, "Why are you always so upset?" I was thinking, this is the last thing I'm going to be asked to do. So I have to keep my fingers crossed and hope my luck holds up.
Sí, tengo una curiosidad.
I've got a curiosity. I would like to ask Judy Dench, what percentage of the success of a film actress is your eyes, and at what extent is diction and your voice? Because sometimes we forget about the voice and the way one enunciates and pronounces things. What's the secret of success of Judy Dench? Your eyes, or that truth that you transmit and portray and convey in all of your characters?
I have no idea. I have no idea. It's up to the... It's up, you know, you do it, and you do it to the best of your ability, and you're given a few notes, and you go home and you change it a bit, and you come back the next day, and if it's still no good, you go home and you change it again. And you... It's luck. It's luck. A lot of it is luck. It's like getting the jobs. Getting work is luck. It's not because you're the only person for that job. I think you must never, ever... ever forget that, because I always think that just here and going back, like infinite regress, just here and going back for many, 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 many miles, are people just waiting to just step in, give you a push, step in and play the part. So, you know, I don't think you can ever think you're the definitive person for a job.
Can I add just one thing to that, though? Because Judy does have a wonderfully distinctive voice, and it's got that husky ingredient. And she once told me that when she was at the beginning of her career, she was in a place called Nottingham Playhouse, and she was doing performances with this wonderful husky voice, and people would come to the box office and say, "But that poor girl, is she all right?" And in the end, she put a notice at the box office saying, "Judy Dench, she's not ill, she just talks like that."
It's true. It's absolutely true. Actually, it wasn't at Nottingham, Trevor. It was doing cabaret.
Oh.
They used to say, somebody said, we'll come back when you're better. That's not, there's nothing I can do about that.
Hola, muy buenas.
My true honor that I'm from Paraguay. I've come all the way from Paraguay. And Dame Judy Dench, I would like to know your opinion about this movement that women are with Time's Up and with Me Too. And what do you think would be, which would be the path to the real empowerment of women in the world of cinema? Thank you very much.
I don't know the answer to that. I think there are many things to be redressed and made right. I hope that's right. And it is an extraordinary moment of change, a kind of sea change at the moment. And many more parts, too, for women, which is very good indeed. And long may that go on. But I don't know.
Shall I jump in and just say one thing? Judy has just made this film with me, Red Joan. And one of the all-important factors in the film is when her colleague Sonia says, "Don't worry, no one will suspect us, we're women." She's actually referring to the position of women in society and therefore the likelihood that they will have a kind of security because they're women. What was really extraordinary at that time was that women studying at the University of Cambridge, as Joan does, could not be awarded a degree. They could only be given a certificate. Men were given a degree. Women, same exam, same gradation, but a certificate, not a degree. That's such a shocking, shocking thing that intellectual people could be that blind. Now, vastly, vastly, a huge amount has changed since then. One of the things that the film that we have just made says is that it's a woman who has the courage, the incredible moral courage, risking being hung by the neck if she is exposed as a spy when she's young, has the incredible courage to do something because she believes it's for the good of the world. And therefore, anything that establishes how utterly extraordinary women can be in this world, then of course we totally want to go with that.
Congratulations for your extraordinary career, Ms. Dench. It's recently I had the opportunity of seeing the documentary about your passion for trees, and I would like to ask you, why do you think that nature is not a passion or a concern shared by the people who govern us?
I wish I knew. I mean, I heard the other day that half the forests in Borneo are being taken down, and in Madagascar, and also some of the great cedars of Lebanon are being taken down. It's very easy, I suppose, for us to say, it's very easy for us to say, this is not right, think of the wildlife, think of what we are destroying. At the same time, if you're living in a country and you need that economy to thrive, then what right have we to say to them, this is not right? I mean, it's a dichotomy. It's very, very difficult. But you have to stand on one side or the other. And I think the most important thing is to make people aware of what is happening and how we're losing so much wildlife because everything, all the trees are being taken down and their habitat is being threatened.
We, at the moment, we have a United Nations organization that deals with all kinds of political conflicts. I think that what we now need is a United Nations ecological organization, a United Nations that makes judgments about you are no longer allowed to do this, we promote this, no, you're not allowed to do that, so that some kind of central authority can begin to take the steps to save the planet.
I like to know from you, as a Shakespeare expert, the performances in theater of Shakespeare has changed a lot. They are today sometimes very, very modern and sometimes very far away from Shakespeare. And at the same time in cinema, we have very good adaptations which are very close to Shakespeare. I'm really a little bit pity that I did not watch you in a Shakespeare adaptation, for instance, by Kenneth Branagh. So I'd like to know something about your impressions about Shakespeare performances in theater today and in cinema.
You?
Was that for Judy or for me? Because we're both very involved with Shakespeare. Shall I start off?
Yes.
I don't know whether I'm the only person in the world, I don't know of anybody else, I have now directed all 37 of Shakespeare's plays. It was an ambition of mine to do them all, and I've now achieved that. Sometimes I have done productions that are in modern dress or shift the period of the play to the 19th century or to the 18th century because some extra ingredient can be got from the text by focusing on a different period of time. And Shakespeare's meaning changes from age to age. Different elements of the plays strike us as being amazingly contemporary at different moments in history. I mean, let me give you one very simple example, that at the end of the Second World War, Laurence Olivier made this wonderful film of Henry V. And that film was like the British national anthem in five acts. It was completely patriotic and wonderfully glorying in the idea that eventually there could be victory against the enemy. And only a few years later, when Henry V was done, it could be done as an anti-war play. It could be done as a play where we were saying the war in Vietnam has got to stop, the war in Korea has got to stop. It seemed to have all of those ingredients because Shakespeare writes from every possible angle. So modern dress productions can be thrilling, and productions that stick to all the rules of the Elizabethan theatre can be thrilling. What started to happen now in contemporary production links with something we were talking about earlier, which is productions where the gender of leading characters is changed because there's a movement to say not enough women get parts in the theater or have major opportunities as men do. So we will have a female King Lear or we will have a female Henry V. Just recently there has been a female Malvolio, a female Mercutio, and so on and so on and so forth. There is a problem about that so much of the content of the plays get misrepresented because of people saying gender no longer exists. On the other hand, the pendulum has to swing further than one wants it to go before it finally comes back to a better place.
Very good. Nothing to add to that.
I don't know, you want to add something on
that? No, I don't want to add anything at all. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Hi, I'm over here. Hi, what an outstanding opportunity to be talking to you, Mr. Trevor Nunn and Dame Judi Dench. It's an absolute honour. Thank you so much for the project. I have to ask, and there's a question for either of you, any advice for like young actors? I know you mentioned luck quite a few times, Judi, but yes, thank you.
Oh. I say to young actors that I meet a lot and work with to see as much as you possibly can. Sorry.
Observe, like you
yes,
said.
Observe as much as you possibly can in the theatre or in life, for that matter. Because you have to draw on what you kind of understand. Sorry.
Have a sec. Shall I take over for
Would
a
you?
Bit?
Sorry.
By the way, is the questioner somebody who is a young actor?
I'm an actor.
Okay, well done. Well done. I absolutely agree with Judi that observing in every way, observing the life around you is a very, very necessary education and training for all young performers. However, in practical terms, I would say that the advice I always give is never, never turn anything down. If it's a tiny job, if it's a job in a small, small theatre, if it's in an attic, it's in a cellar, if that job is offered, do it, because one thing can lead to another. Nothing leads to nothing. If you're sitting at home and waiting for the telephone to ring, nobody knows of your existence. When you do that little bit of activity, you never know who you're going to meet, who is going to influence you, what friendship you might make that takes you to another stage. Therefore, be involved in any way that you can. I mean, we live, not everyone will agree with this, but we live in a random universe. We live in a world of sliding doors where you can have a completely different existence if you just pop through the sliding doors and a different one if you miss the sliding doors. In the theatre, and probably in the movies too, it's the most random corner of the entire random universe. I mean, you can do a wonderful audition, and everybody at the audition is saying, oh, I think we found her. I think we found her. Yes, yes, yes. And then just 2 minutes before the auditions are all over, somebody else comes in and, No, she's just that little bit better. The color of the eyes are better. She's a little bit shorter. She makes a slightly better match with him. And therefore, the part doesn't go where it was going to go. Tiny, tiny things can influence. You have to understand that. You have to say, I keep going in the face of all of those random judgments. And if I believe in myself, somebody in the end will believe in me.
Mm. Okay. Do you have something to add, or?
No, it's a question I get asked all the time, and it is, and also easy, isn't it, when you're working to say to somebody who isn't working, but don't, as Trevor said, don't ever lose your enthusiasm and don't ever not go and see other people doing something. And if you get the opportunity, I mean, we are lucky in Britain because we have a thing called the Edinburgh Festival, which is just finished, which people go. And when I went up to the Edinburgh Festival years and years ago, people were performing everywhere. But I mean, recently, for instance, two people went up and did a play in a car, and they sat in the front seat and did the play, and the audience, all two or three of them, sat in the back seat and did the thing. But it was very exciting and you know, innovative and
inclusive.
And inclusive, yes. So the thing is, don't give up your enthusiasm. Go and see, make up your mind what you think works and what doesn't work, and keep at it, because it'll happen.
Vale, pues me temo que tenemos.
Okay, well, I'm afraid we have to finish the press conference. I want to thank Dame Judi Dench and Trevor Dunn. Thank you very much for being here. And thank you once again.